DW Africa Link.
So you can't compete with a president who is active. First of all, they never said that he should step aside.
The incumbent, President Yoweri Museveni, of course, has the financial muscle and he has the protection around him. He has security. And on the other hand, His Excellency Bobi Wine has the physical ground. Yes, he has supporters, but then he has limited finances.
For decades, I've been hearing this. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni wants to extend his stay in power. Well, that's the situation again, this time, ahead of elections on the 15th of January. Now, bear in mind, the 81-year-old leader has already ruled his country for nearly 40 years. To put things into perspective, 80% of Ugandans were born after or during the year Museveni took power in 1986, after years of a guerrilla war. So, will he win again? What's the situation on the ground? And will the elections be free and fair? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Once celebrated for toppling a brutal dictatorship in 1986 and ushering in stability, Museveni now faces mounting criticism for consolidating power, weakening institutions, and narrowing democratic space. This election, therefore, is about more than just who wins. It's a test of whether civic freedoms in Uganda can endure. To unpack these issues, we're joined by Charity Kalebo, a prominent Ugandan lawyer, pro-democracy activist, and executive director of the Electoral Laws and Governance Institute in Uganda. Also with us is Frank Yiga, DW's correspondent in Kampala, Uganda. Hello, both of you. Welcome to Africa Link. Charity, with elections fast approaching, is Uganda prepared for free and fair polls?
So Uganda is fairly ready for elections. I do not know about the freeness, the fairness, and the credibility. And I'll give my reasons why I say I cannot be sure if it will be ready for free, fair, credible elections. What I know is that we are set to have the election. So far, the ballot papers have been printed. BBS machines were procured. The voters have been fairly educated on what should happen. There's not been very good voter education throughout because the donors pulled out and most civil society organizations did not carry out the voter education that they were required to carry out. And so we have had a lot of lapses on the voter education trail. And that then affects how the new time voter will show up and what they will do on the ballot paper. The other thing that we have seen is that during the campaigns, there's been a lot of violence, a lot of disagreement. We've also had people being denominated from the election positions or positions to be elected. Now that is unprecedented. It has never happened before. It's the first time it's happening.
We know that civil society organizations play a critical role in monitoring, you know, abuses, educating citizens, and holding institutions accountable, especially all ahead of elections in Uganda. What has been their challenge? Because some of the things you are complaining about are things that civil society organizations should be engaged in. What's been the challenge?
So civil society organizations ideally carry out what we call civic and voter education. And this time round, they've not been able to carry out civic and voter education for two reasons. We applied for accreditation. We were never given accreditation by the Electoral Commission. a few organizations were given that accreditation, and the few that were given that accreditation were required to carry out voter education a certain way. Even then, those few that were given that accreditation did not get funding. There was no sufficient funding. So because of the funding gaps, there's been minimal voter education. And therefore, the voter goes to the polls without sufficient knowledge of the electoral process. And yet the court rulings of 2001, the court ruling of 2006, and the court ruling of 2016 all alluded to the fact that Uganda needed to have a strong voter education system ahead of elections, because if the voters are not educated on what they do during polls, then the polls are poorly attended. And if they are so well attended, there is usually what we call spoiled ballots. And we have had a big number of voter apathy, which has been a result of poor voter education. And I can guarantee you that even for this election, we're going to see the same factors play out: a low voter turnout and the question of spoiled ballots, high spoiled ballots, because of poor voter education. The first time voter has had little information to engage with. And then with this election, I have also explained to you and said we've had issues to do with denomination up to the last minute, that people were denominated from elections even as late as yesterday. So people put in their nomination papers. They were approved by the Electoral Commission in September. And in December, they were campaigning. And now 12 days to the election, they have been denominated. What that has done is to alienate certain candidates. People feel like they are segregated. There are those who feel it is good for them, but there are those who feel the election belongs to particular people. Then we have also had the unprecedented number of unopposed candidates, that we have many people who have turned out as unopposed. We've had it before in the 2016 election and in the 2021 election, but this time the number has swelled to almost 17 people unopposed. What that means is that the citizen has not voted for this particular candidate. And so there will be questions of accountability in future. Remember, democracy is about accountability, that because I elected you, I expect that you are carrying part of my mandate to Parliament. Because Article 1, Clause 3 of Uganda's constitution does state that Ugandans shall devolve their power through the ballot by electing their leaders. Only devolve your power to a leader whom you believe is representing your views. Now, but for the unopposed, you've not elected them. And so whose views are they representing?
Thank you very much for that, Charity. And from all that we're hearing from Charity Frank, it suggests to me that the atmosphere, the political atmosphere ahead of elections in Uganda is quite tense. Is that right?
Yeah, true. It's tense. And it's been like that for quite some time. And when she says denominating some candidates, it's shocking that it is one-sided. We're seeing all those candidates who are denominated or deregistered by the Electoral Commission are from mainly one political party, and that is Robert Kyagulanyi or Bobi Wine's National Unity Platform. The whole issue here is to have the ruling NRM candidates, you know, stand unopposed.
What are the reasons being given for preventing other presidential candidates from running?
Well, the Electoral Commission comes up with reasons. One of the reasons they give is that the people who nominated, because they require a number of people, supporters, to nominate you, could be 10 or a number similar to that. But they look at one person who nominated you being not a resident of that same constituency. So they cite that as one of the reasons. And maybe it could be that one person who nominated you didn't have a national ID or didn't have certain requirements, which are weak reasons to give. I mean, we're seeing this for the very first time. It's never happened before in the history of elections in Uganda. And it's so absurd.
I'm just wondering how the situation is for journalists like you. What is the situation now and what can you expect?
Well, we expect tough times because already we're experiencing those hard conditions under which we're working. Non-discriminatory violence and brutality meted on many journalists, many of our colleagues while on duty. And yesterday we saw one of our colleagues being brutally beaten up. His head was battered on a vehicle. His camera was destroyed. He was strangled by a policeman in broad daylight. I mean, because he was covering elections, he was covering campaigns of Robert Kyagulanyi. There's no other reason, just that. And they beat him brutally, so badly. What we heard from him, he's hospitalized as of now, and we hope he recovers.
It's not sounding good, guys. Charity, I'm going to jump back to you because during Uganda's 2021 elections, authorities ordered telecom firms to block social media, and later they even shut down the internet. Now, ahead of 2026 elections, the government denies plans for another blackout, but the government has announced a ban on live broadcasting or streaming of riots, so-called unlawful processions, and violent incidents. What's the strategy here, you think, Charity?
So, of course, the government is aware that every time we come out of elections, we do what we call universal peer review mechanism. It's an international mechanism where government is asked to account for the actions that they took during the electoral period and whether there was actually freeness of the citizens to associate, assemble, and also participate freely in electoral processes. So what they don't want is documentation of violence, is documentation of incidents that are going to cause them to answer for what they are doing wrong. But there is actually no freeness on the ground. So they are curtailing journalists from documenting some of the things they assume will be violent, because they have said anybody who stays at the polling station will be beaten or they will be picked up like grasshoppers. That's what the chairperson of the Electoral Commission said. But the law allows for citizens to stay at the polling stations and guard their ballots or their votes as long as they are 21 meters away from the polling area. That is what the law says. So if that is the law of the land, then why is it being made illegal for anyone to stay?
This is one of the defense from the government. They defended the ban as a necessary security measure to maintain public order. Doesn't it make sense?
So they said it is a necessary security guarantee or order. Of course, security is critical to all of us. Nobody wants violence. Not even I, as a supporter of democracy, I don't want violence, and I don't want our country to degenerate into violence. But we have precedent from all the elections that we've held. This is our seventh cycle of election. We have never agreed on the results of the election, never once. In 2001, why we went to court was because there was dispute to the election. In 2006, why we went to court is because there was dispute of the results of the election. In 2011, why there was walk to work is because there was dispute as to the results of the election. In 2016, why we went to court is because there was dispute of the election. In 2021, there was a botched electoral case that was brought up by Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu. And that was also because there was no consensus around the results of the election. That means that even this election, there will be contention on the results already the process is showing you there's been a lot of unjustified skewness to narrow down the space of the opposition and of civil society, free-thinking civil society organizations. Now, that already creates doubt on the transparency of the process. That is where the urge to keep the ballot is coming from. So as much as security is important, my advice to government would be to allay the fears. And how do you allay the fears? Is by talking to people, build confidence, take down walls of doubt, take down the walls of thinking something is going to change, because there has been people who have been saying the machines have not been, people have not been educated on how they are working. People have to walk to the Electoral Commission to ask for information, like Mugisha Muntu, one of the presidential candidates, went there and he was assured the machine will. But you see, being assured is one thing and seeing it work is another thing. In 2021, at 68% of polling stations observed, those machines malfunctioned. And then when court called for the machines to be able to look at the data that had been collected, Electoral Commission said the machines were dead, they had malfunctioned. So you see, there is doubt around the process. And if confidence had been built in the citizenry, I don't think it would have been a big deal to tell them to stay off. They certainly would have stayed off and security would have been able to take place.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm just wondering how the government can build confidence now, because I get your point. I mean, if live coverage of protests is restricted, how can voters independently verify what's happening on the ground? It's a genuine concern. You know, there's also a possible, you know, question about can a democratic election truly be credible when it seems the state is trying to maintain some legal monopoly on the live visual narrative of the vote. This is how some experts have also described it. But I want to find out from you, Charity, what should a government do now to instill confidence in the upcoming elections? Or is it too late to even do that?
It's not yet too late. We have 10 days to go. One, they should encourage the security officials to respect citizens of Uganda, because elections are a civil matter. They are not a security matter. Elections are civil. Anybody should wake up and happily go vote and happily return to the polling station to hear results. Anybody should be able to access the voters' register, look at it, scrutinize it and analyze it, and still go on with their lives happily. But right now, Sarah Bidete is locked up, my other colleague, because the court said she illegally accessed the voters' register, and yet it is a public document. Now, to allay such fears, what should happen is that the register should be given to everybody, because that is what it always is. It is always uploaded onto the Electoral Commission website, and people should be allowed to scrutinize it for all that they care. And people should be allowed to access information as much as they care, because elections are civil processes. The more information you have, the more transparent it is. The more concealed information, the less transparent it is, the more suspicious it is, the more people begin to take actions that are contrary to what a government might have wanted.
Right. Thank you, Charity. Frank, what is on top of the agenda for people that you've been speaking to ahead of elections? Why are they going out there, or are they planning to go out there to vote?
Well, people want change. Change is the key issue they want. No matter who comes in, they say 40 years have been so long to have one leader be in power. They believe having a different leader will come with positive changes. They want to see better services, you know, delivered to them. Better services in different sectors, like in health and education. All those are dilapidated. We're seeing hospitals with no medicines, no medical supplies. Schools are all, you know, down. Infrastructure is gone. poor roads and all that. So they want to see better services. They also want employment opportunities, because the currently we're having so many young people who are jobless, because they believe once they have a new leader, he will come with new ideas that suit them, and they stand to benefit from the ideas that he will come with. And these young people, of course, are looking at their favorite, I should say, Bobby Wine. According to my research, they seem to be, fitting. He seems to be fitting in their demands. So they believe he's their choice, who will take them to the promised land and have all their demands or needs, addressed.
Got it. Thank you very much, Frank. And Charity, as we start to round this up, there's been a lot of calls for electoral reforms. What is needed to make you trust elections in Uganda?
One, the judges in 2016 provided six recommendations that were never taken up by the state. One of the recommendations was that technology keeps changing and innovations happen every year. And so there are changes that happen worldwide in terms of technology and tracking results and transmitting them. And so the judges said we needed a comprehensive law, and we needed stakeholder engagement of 2 years before elections for all people involved in elections to understand whatever technology are introduced in elections, to allay fears, to allay doubts, and to make the processes more transparent. We have not attained that. We do not have a comprehensive law on the use of technology in the elections in Uganda. That is one of the reforms that needs to happen. Secondly, the judges ruled against commercialization of politics, which you had Yiga refer to. One of the laws that was meant to be very stringent was if anyone was caught to have bribed a voter, they should not be elected into office for at least 10 years. This was the position. And so we haven't had a comprehensive law on vote buying. We have scanty positions within the law on vote buying, but we do not have a comprehensive law on commercialization of politics, where people spend up to 10 billion, 3 billion, 4 billion on an election. And so it becomes a do or die process. Then thirdly, we need reforms in the area of the institutions that are mandated with clearing processes around electoral processes to make them more transparent. Institutions such as the National Council for Higher Education, institutions such as UNAIB, and institutions such as Electoral Commission. So now we need to know clearly who decides that my academic papers, for example, are up to scratch. Who decides that the certificate I have from National Council is a credible one? Some candidates are saying your certificate is credible, and the Electoral Commission saying your certificate is not credible for the election. So who sets the standard? The law seems to put the standard clearly for National Council for Higher Education, but gives the mandate to the Electoral Commission to decide on who can be nominated, who can participate in an electoral process.
Clearly, a lot of changes are needed, electoral reforms are needed for citizens to trust the electoral process even more. Very informative and educative discussion I've had, and I'm sure listeners will feel the same. Charity Kalebo, prominent Ugandan lawyer, pro-democracy activist, and the executive director of the Electoral Laws and Governance Institute in Uganda. Thank you very much. Also, Frank Yiga, DW correspondent in Kampala, Uganda. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Ed, and it was a wonderful conversation.
Civil society organizations have become one of the last lines of defense for accountability in Uganda. For ordinary Ugandans, there are real consequences for the erosion of civil liberties.
Not really. Remember, this one is an incumbent president, okay? This one, much as he's a candidate, he's incumbent. So he's active. So you can't compete with a president who is active. First of all, they never said that he should step aside. So he's continuous. He's working. He's in office. So this one, Bobi Wine or Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu, he can't be on the same footing with that current president.
The incumbent, President Yoweri Museveni, of course, has the financial muscle and he has the protection around him. He has security. And on the other hand, His Excellency Bobi Wine has the physical ground. Yes, he has supporters, but then he has limited finances.
No, it is not an equal footing. Honestly, one is an incumbent and one is an aspirant, an aspiring candidate. Of course, it can't be equal footing. One has the army, has the resources at their own disposal, and the other does not.
Meanwhile, key opposition figure Kizza Besigye is currently facing charges of treason and has been held for over a year. For activists in Kampala, this is a stark warning of what can happen when institutions stop checking power. Please share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.